Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at MOFAD.org.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, Heritage Radio Network's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Black culture through the complicated lens of agriculture. We speak to Carla Hall about her uncompromising soul food recipes.
And I was like, what am I doing? Why am I changing my family's history for another culture?
We also hear from Gabriela Rodriguez at Harlem Grown's Youth Farm Uptown.
About empowerment and, you know, community resilience building through this work. Food is kind of just a vehicle.
Leah Penniman addresses feeling like an outsider in the farming community.
I could count on my two hands the number of people who appeared to be POC, people of color. Mm-hmm. And so I literally would go around little slips of paper and say, hey, meet at 1 o'clock under this tree so we can talk.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's Meat plus sign THREE, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network, and today I am welcoming Steve Jones and Adam Lindsley to the show to discuss their amazing book, Cheese, Beer, Wine, and Cider, A Field Guide to 75 Perfect Pairings. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Diane.
Thank you.
This book has blown my mind, I have to say. I would say I know something about beer, I know something small about wine, I know almost nothing about cider, but this book is a total education on everything, on all four ingredients. 75 pairings described so well, I have to congratulate you.
Oh, wow, thanks.
Anyway,
yeah, thank you.
So, how long, I can't even imagine, how long did this take to figure out this book?
Steve, you want to go?
3.5 years.
That was a lot of eating and tasting and drinking you were doing.
Yeah, a lot of it was really fun.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, if you're going to do research, that's pretty good research to do.
It comes across. It definitely comes across. And I was frustrated in that I wasn't drinking and reading at the same time.
That's a good reaction.
You can fix that.
I can, and I will. But, you know, when you're reading in a bit of a rush, you can't get all the alcohol lined up. Anyway, so how much did you know before you started?
Gosh, Steve, do you want to talk about your journey?
Yes, tell me, Steve, tell me how you got into cheese and beer and wine and cider.
Well, cheese has been 20 plus years so far.
Mm-hmm.
And then wine, beer, and cider were quite often present in the places that I was working.
Yes.
And quite often at the end of the night, we would sit down with the beverages and the cheese, and that's kind of where the magic started, for sure.
Yes. And which was your first love with cheese?
Your beer, for sure.
Okay.
I've always liked all the beverages.
Uh-huh.
That cider's the real newcomer, but it's kind of the secret weapon.
Yeah. Now, you say in the book very quickly, you end up saying, I think, that cider is best or easiest to pair.
Yeah. Adam, don't you feel the same way?
I do. Yeah, that's kind of one big thing that we learned from this whole experience was just how easy it was to take pretty much any cheese and you could find a cider that went really well with it.
Mm.
And you know, it makes sense. You know, people have been eating cheese and apple forever. So, of course, cider's going to fit that bill well.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I guess I don't make the leap from cider to apples. I don't know why. I know that it is. What?
You have a couple of things though working in cider's favor. You've got the fruit for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You quite often have acid.
Uh huh.
And then carbonation quite often.
Ah, okay. So all three.
Yeah, and those are all ringers for preparing, for sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what amazed me also, I'm going to read aloud from the book. I love your pairing descriptions. I'm going to read the first one that you talk about with beer. Drinking a fine American lager with a wedge of death and taxes is to invite harmony into your life. Together, they become one and the same, bolstering each other's most prominent qualities into a cohesive experience without losing any character in either the beer or the cheese. The well-salted death and taxes catches the beer's graininess and sugars, clarifying them until they evoke cereal and honeycomb. Meanwhile, the lager connects with the rind, bringing up those cocoa and yeast notes right alongside the beer's highlights, while upping the cheese's creaminess to a decadent level. I mean, really?
I'm getting hungry just hearing it.
this is when I read that first beer description, or beer and that first pair, I thought, oh my God, these guys can write. They know flavors in a very in-depth and interesting way.
Yeah, Steve in particular is so good at pinpointing those oftentimes of really obscure flavors. You know, he has a lot more experience with it than I do, but I'll say, oh, you know, this kind of tastes like nut or something. And then Steve will pinpoint like the actual nut. Oh, that's actually like walnut, toasted walnut. So I learned quite a lot working with him on that.
So he is the genius taster of the two of you?
Well, Adam's no slouch, for sure.
Well, I'm sure he improved as you went along.
I think so.
I think we both did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both,
We learned so much.
Just, go ahead.
Even like the sidebars that we wrote, the quick bites.
Yes, yes.
That was my favorite part of the whole book, was just going deep on these little bitty subjects.
Uh-huh. Yes, I was wondering who decided what. Now, when you planned the book, What were you thinking it would be, and how did it change along the course of writing it?
Do you remember, Adam?
Yeah, specifically with the sidebars?
With the whole book.
The whole book, yeah. Well, I mean, originally we had planned to pair a beer and a wine and a cider with every single cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But as we started to get into actually researching the book, we realized what an enormous undertaking that would have been.
Right.
3.5 years wouldn't have been even, we wouldn't have scratched the surface of that.
Yeah.
So we realized that really finding a really good match with one cheese and one beverage was the way to go.
Okay.
So that was one big change.
Okay.
But those quick bites, those sidebars, were there from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Steve and I both latched onto that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Of stepping just to the side of cheese or beer, wine, and cider, and mm-hmm. kind of digging a little deeper into some of the fun facts that people don't often hear.
Yes, I found your selection of fun facts very interesting and varied.
Yeah, it was tough even just narrowing it down to those, to be honest. Mm-hmm. We could have written another entire book that was just quick bites.
Well, there's the future.
There you go. There you go.
So now, how well did you know each other at the beginning? Were you already friends? How did you meet?
We met, Adam wrote about a pairing that we did, and it was so well received. It was by far the best traction that we've ever got on anything that anyone's written about us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called Adam up maybe 2 weeks later, and I said, hey, we were getting great traction. And he replied with, yeah, it's the best traction we've ever got on something I've written. And so I said, let's get a beer and, talk.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the beginning.
Yeah, I had known of Steve for years. His here in Portland, his cheese appears in so many restaurants in
mm-hmm.
town.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see, Steve's cheese written in chalk in half the menus in Portland. And so I knew him by reputation for sure, and had been in Cheese Bar before and seen him around town, but never had formally met him until that first beer and cheese pairing event that I wrote about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was just meant to be.
Okay, and what did you write about it in? The newspaper, or?
This was for Serious Eats, which is an online food website.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the beers in the book seem more unusual to me than the wines. Is that my imagination, or do I just recognize wine types more easily?
I think all the beverages are pretty varied.
Uh-huh.
I think beer has such an esoteric range.
Uh-huh.
It may appear to be more extreme.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's part of why I love beer with the cheese.
Mm-hmm. Because there's so many different tastes.
Yeah, I mean, you can go from super, super bitter to super sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You can be 3% alcohol. You can be 13% alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't think we got too obscure on the beer styles. It was a little more difficult to find 25 styles of cider,
uh-huh.
Just because that style is by far the least varied.
Mm-hmm.
But for the beers, you can find those styles in any city in the U.S.
Okay, now what about the prices? You don't include any.
Mm-hmm.
How expensive would it be to do this whole book? As a consumer.
Every pairing? Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, most of these beverages really are not super extreme in price.
Okay. I mean, I thought the wines had some lower possibilities for wine.
Yeah, for certain. You could be coming in under $25 a bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, on most
the beer and the beer and cider will be even cheaper than that.
Well, but that's because they're smaller amounts.
Right.
Not necessarily cheaper per liquid, you know, per amount.
Mm. Yeah, per ounce. I mean, beer's getting up there with wine these days.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Okay, so I didn't care. I mean, I know how expensive cheese is, and I don't really care, but I was wondering how, you know, what the cost would be to do the whole book, because I, of course, you know, have plans to do it.
Good plan.
Anyway, so you weren't already friends, but you met, and then what else changed in the book plan? Did you both write? Did you write together? Did you write separately? Did you make assignments?
Yeah.
All the above.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Adam.
Okay. So the typical pairing, it would go, we would meet at Cheese Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, we would have these big spreads. Lots of cheeses, lots of different beers and wines and ciders. And, you know, that gets a lot of looks from other people who are dining at Cheese Bar. Lots of jealous, hungry looks.
Yeah.
But we quickly realized that the smarter way to do it was to really really cut down on the number of options that we're looking at. It doesn't necessarily mean you will find a good match in that.
Yeah.
But if you're pairing so many cheeses and so many beverages, you quickly lose track of what works and what doesn't.
Right. And your palate gets tired.
Yeah, and your palate gets tired. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we quickly pare that down to these smaller little tasting sessions.
Okay.
And we would take copious notes as we tasted each combination.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the evening, I would take that back and kind of compile the notes and then start to, you know, put together a shell for what that tasting would look like if we found one that worked.
Okay.
Yeah, and then just kind of pass it back and forth
mm-hmm.
Until we get it sounding good.
Okay. Now we have to take a break. I'll be right back to talk with my two guests, Steve Jones and Adam Linsky, about their book, Cheese, Beer, Wine, and Cider. Or it's not actually an end, but cider.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history, and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Hi, Diane Stemple back on Heritage Radio Network on Cutting the Curd, talking to Adam Linsky and Steve Jones about their new book, which the undertitle is A Field Guide to 75 Perfect Pairings. So how did you both get into cheese? Maybe, Adam, tell me. I think we might know how Steve got into cheese, but Adam, tell me how you got into cheese.
Just through wanting to be a part of anything that tasted good, to put it as bluntly as that.
Okay.
For years I wasn't really, didn't really pay attention to food. I was in Los Angeles for a number of years, and it wasn't until the very end of my tenure there, like around 2007, that I started to pay attention to food.
Uh-huh.
And start going to good restaurants. And through that, then you start becoming exposed to great cheese on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I moved back up here to Portland and started seeing Steve's cheese in every restaurant, and that kind of led me to Cheese Bar,
okay.
which is just a mecca for cheese here in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give all credit to Steve for really opening my eyes
okay.
to how great cheese is and how varied it is.
And Adam, what was your first? Which booze did you like first?
I definitely came to wine first.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really get into beer until I moved back up here to Portland
mm-hmm.
around that same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because beer just wasn't a thing in Los Angeles
right.
in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody drank wine.
Right.
So wine's first. But after I found beer, it definitely moved into my number one spot.
Uh-huh.
And then I started home brewing at home and visiting breweries wherever I go now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, cider. There was a brief resurgence in the 90s, I read, I think, in your book. And
mm-hmm.
then it explodes after 2010. Now, why do you think it's exploded? Are they copying beer? What's going on?
I think that they're definitely following in the path that beer started.
Uh-huh.
But it's also the gluten issue.
Uh-huh.
So it's that inexpensive, you know, sessionable beverage
mm-hmm.
that doesn't have gluten.
Oh.
But then, I mean, also the artisan ciders out there, it's day and night where it was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, one of your great pairings that I loved reading about was Garrocha and cider. Let's see. And you discuss the difference between British cider, way drier, and American. How did that come to pass?
How did...
Adam, you want to take this one?
Yeah, Adam?
Sorry.
British cider, British cider versus American cider.
Mm-hmm.
What are the differences? How did that come to pass?
So how did cider become less dry here in America?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, the Brits just love that bone-dry cider. And I just don't know if American palates have that love as much.
Mm-hmm. So you think, like, different nationalities have different ranges of taste?
Without a doubt.
Mm, okay.
American palate leans really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And Diane, I'm sure you even see this with cheese, you know, with the sweeter cultures of cheese these days.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that naturally our palate leans a little more to that sweeter end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. You see that in, like you mentioned, cheese and especially cheddar.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Do you see a difference between East Coast and West Coast in this country?
You definitely do with beer more than you do cider.
Yeah.
But you're starting to see some real regional differences with cider also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
But with beer, like...
Oh, sorry.
Steve?
Sorry. The like West Coast style IPAs compared to a Midwest IPA compared to an East Coast IPA.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a huge gradation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And I think we're starting to see that with cider, but it's like everything, it's 5, 6, 7 years behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was just in New England in this past year and hit up a bunch of cideries when I was there, and I was surprised by how similar in flavor they taste to the ones that I can get here in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although in Vermont you have iced cider, which you don't see too much outside of that.
Right. Now, explain to me, the book talks about single varietal ciders.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, can you explain that a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah, so most cider is made with a combination of different cider apples.
Uh-huh.
And single varietals really just focus on one apple and really highlight the characteristics of that apple.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see a lot of traditional cider apples like Kingston Black or Wixen that manage to have enough balance to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sweetness with the acid and the bitterness where it can stand alone, where a lot of cider apples can't do that. They'll be too sweet or too bitter. Too acidic. So those single varietals are really fun to just really highlight everything great about that one apple.
Mm-hmm. Here's another great example of your attitude coming across in the book. It's talking about Camembert and one of the artisanal ciders, and it says, "Fret not. It's much, much better than it sounds. Once a locally consumed cheese, Camembert's popularity exploded after it was included in French soldiers' rations during World War I. Pasteurized milk Camembert isn't hard to come by, but PDO designated Camembert de Normandie, made with unfiltered raw milk, is now produced by fewer dairies than ever before. We can't even get raw milk Camembert in the States because it's only aged about a month. But many producers, French and American, make stellar versions of oodles of savory, with oodles of savory character." That's another one of my favorite passages in the book. I don't know if the book tells you until you open it how great it is.
I wish it would.
Yeah, yeah, I wanted to have on the front, "This is a great book." I'm doing my best to encourage our readers, our listeners, to buy it.
I think you just got a quote to add into the next edition there, Diane.
Yeah.
Oh, and then what about the peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you guys remember where that is discussed?
Yes. Which one was that?
I could tell you.
I think we even had a couple that
Oh, there's more than one like peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
But well, there's one that was real predominant. I'm trying to remember.
Mountina?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I've never heard of Mountina.
It's kind of like a Frontina style cheese.
Uh-huh.
Made in Montana.
Yes. Now, do you sell it on the West Coast?
Yeah, it rotates through our selection.
Okay. Because I don't think I've seen it out here in the East Coast.
Yeah, I don't know what their footprint looks like.
Yeah. And then...
But we did try...
Oh, sorry.
We did try really hard to include cheeses and beverages from all around the country.
And you did a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like many cheesemakers, big and small, were included. I felt like there was a good spread. I mean, you probably couldn't do as good a job with your beer, wine, and cider, but the cheeses were very fairly distributed.
Yeah, and I think we did a pretty good job in the beverages too.
Okay. Maybe I know less about them.
Well, and also there's so many regions in America that aren't producing wine.
Right.
So that's a bit limiting.
Right. Now,
yeah, mine definitely limited.
Which of you wants to tell us about, I don't even know how to pronounce it, Troc? Something in the Basque Country where you go to a cider house and they say a word?
Yeah.
Adam, I think you wrote that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Were you there?
No. So I haven't been to a Basque one. We actually just have a Spanish cidery here in the Pacific Northwest. They just had their annual chach, and it's just this party where the cider maker opens up his business to the public. They're pouring the fresh cider. And typically people will line up and just kind of hold their glass in this certain position where the arc of the cider is going to come out of the barrel and hopefully hit the glass and not the floor. And they take a quick swig and then go to the back of the line, and then everybody just keeps going through.
Oh, do it over?
Yeah.
And do you switch winemaker? Do you switch cider makers, or you just stay at the same party?
You can, I mean, every cidery's own thing, so you can stay at one cidery. Typically, they have big steaks they serve. Medium rare or pretty rare, actually.
And is cider best when it's fresh?
Most cider, some cider is designed, some higher alcohol cider is designed to be aged. But like beer, fresh is best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and sometimes there's the oxidative qualities are desirable too. So kind of like sherry, where you're getting those floor, that, you know, sort of nutty flavors and stuff that come with oxidation.
Well, this is just, this was an example to me with the little thing about the Basque Country. I think that was in a quick bite. And it was so, I'd never heard of it. I mean, it was like this far-flung piece of information that your book enjoys to tell people about, that I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and what's great about the Pacific Northwest, there's just so many people who are put into beer and cider and wine and cheese, and they have all these great stories. So you're talking to these people, and you hear something, it's like, oh, this would be good to explore. You know, I think that was one of them. We just decided to research a little bit more and found this wonderful tradition.
Now, one thing I want to ask you, Steve, is about your smackdowns, your beer and wine smackdowns. When did you start those? Do you still do them? What is your purpose?
So we started them, I'm guessing, about 10 years ago with Feast Portland. They wanted me to be a moderator on a panel. And it was going to be beer versus wine. And that could have been really mundane and dry. And I was like, well, who wants to sit through that? So I said, hey, guys, let's make this be like a boxing match. And so we made it very, very, it's like physical, basically. We were throwing adjectives at each other, like punches. it was a lot of what's the word I'm looking for?
Rowdy?
Yeah, very much so, yes.
So you were on the beer side and somebody would be on the wine side, or?
No, I was the referee, so I was presenting a cheese.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, Christian De Benedetti, who wrote The Great American Ale Trail, mm-hmm. was representing beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a few different people do wine, like Marissa Ross from Bon Appetit,
mm-hmm.
and David Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did many, many different battles. But, yeah, I would present the cheese, and then they would duke it out over which beverage would win.
Okay. And how did the audience decide who
the
actually
audience,
won?
Yeah. You know, and wine won more often than beer.
Oh.
Which, yeah, I was always bummed out about. But I think you've got the history of, you know, people just say wine and cheese, wine and cheese.
Right.
So, you know, you've got a big battle to win there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And would the beers be well suited to the cheeses?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would give each participant the cheese about a week in advance.
Okay.
So they had some time to play around and come up with a perfect pairing.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it was a good, the beer could have won.
Oh, yeah, and it did often.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the bout, more often than not, wine won by a nose.
It had more votes or more wins.
Yeah. But also, this is a festival that's real heavy with wine drinkers, too. So.
Ah. Oh, well, you got to keep them out.
that brings up a good point. I mean, that kind of was the central, not the central, but one of the central goals of the book, was to open people's minds to, you know, other pairings, mm-hmm. not just wine.
Yeah.
As Steve mentioned, everybody thinks cheese and wine. You know, it's just ingrained into our heads.
Right.
But people far less often think about cheese and beer or cheese and cider.
Mm-hmm.
And we really wanted to help level the playing field a little bit.
Oh, good. Good. I mean, I, as a beer lover myself, new to it, but still way more fond of it than wine, that's one of the reasons why I like your book so much. Because it's beers first, and I feel like I have to go try all the different types now, and I'm pretty IPA oriented, and now I understand why my cheeses haven't gone so well with my beers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hoppy beers are the worst to pair with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like hops are a megaphone that scream like bitter.
Yeah.
It really latches on to any flavor.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a sheepy note, it'll latch onto that sheepy note.
Uh-huh.
You know, if there's a bitter note, it'll really accentuate it.
Mm-hmm.
So hops are tough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why, that's my first adventure post book, is to find all the more unusual beers with the recommended cheeses and try them out. That's my plan.
Excellent.
Very good plan.
Anyway, well, I want to thank you. I'm sorry for the difficulty hearing each other. I hope our listeners persevere. And it's been great talking to you both. I encourage our listeners to buy your book as soon as it comes out. When is it coming out?
March 19th.
Ah, okay. And thank you very much.
Thanks, Diane.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.